Get the air out of your shoes and prepare yourselves for a period of simulated exhilaration.
You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
There's something curious about this broadcast.
I'm Don Jacobson, one of the hosts of Moving On, here every Friday right after the noon news. Moving On isn't the only place to hear folk music on KBOO. Every weekday from 5:30 to 7 a.m., a different host brings you for a variety of folk music, and bluegrass is on Saturdays from 9 a.m. till noon. This music exists not to make a gazillionaires, but it is music that comes from the heart and the head for the enrichment and entertainment of the listeners. With federal funding for public broadcasting in the crosshairs, please step up and support this vital community institution. Go to kboo.fm/give, text to KBOO 44321, or click on donate on your mobile app. Your generosity is greatly appreciated.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays at 8 a.m. For 30 years, Celeste and I have been encouraging and engaging interviews and conversations about politics, social issues, and things which concerns you, your family, and your community. Join us on Mondays at 8 a.m. and be a part of this community radio experience.
What it does is it upholds Tennessee's law banning gender-affirming care, receiving puberty blockers or hormones for transgender youth. Close to half the states have a law like Tennessee's.
This is a devastating opinion impacting hundreds of thousands of youth and families that are now really, I think, faced with making a decision about, am I going to ask my child to change who they are, or are we going to change where we live?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Brian DeShazer. Australia relaxes blood donation restrictions for gay and bisexual men. The Trump administration defunds queer youth suicide prevention, and the U.S. Supreme Court blocks pediatric gender-affirming health care. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Ava Davis.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
With a news wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 21st, 2025. A U.S. Supreme Court ruling will allow states to ban gender-affirming health care for transgender young people. More than two dozen states can continue to enforce their bans, and the High Court's June 18th decision encourages others to follow suit. Progressive Justice Sonia Sotomayor's written dissent harshly condemned the majority for refusing to call a spade a spade. All three progressive justices opposed the six conservatives who voted to uphold Tennessee's ban, so it was a purely ideological split. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion in the U.S. v. Scametti case. He rejected the plaintiff's constitutional equal protection challenge to Tennessee's ban and threw out their demand for heightened scrutiny in determining its legality. The majority ruled that denying puberty blockers and gender-affirming hormone treatments for trans minors does not discriminate based on transgender status or sex, since it applies equally to both males and females. Roberts asserts that the law targets medical treatments and not personal identities.
Writing for the minority in U.S. v. Scametti, Sotomayor countered that the majority opinion fails because they denied that the law determines access to the covered medications based on the recipient's sex. She warned that the decision invites legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. In her words, the ruling authorizes, without second thought, untold harm to transgender children and the parents and families who love them. Virtually every professional physical and mental health organization in the U.S. supports parent-approved gender-affirming health care for trans minors. Advocates argue that lawmakers and now high court justices are substituting political ideology for sound medical practices. Queer rights defenders find some hope in the fact that the High Court specifically reaffirmed its 2020 Bostock ruling that protects transgender and other queer people from discrimination in the workplace. This Way Out's David Hunt chats with legal scholar Brad Sears about the Supreme Court ruling and its implications following news wrap on most of these same stations.
Most Australian gay and bisexual men and transgender women who have sex with men will finally be able to donate blood without a 3-month celibacy requirement beginning on July 14th. The announcement came this week from Lifeblood, the blood services branch of the Australian Red Cross. As their press release explained, most people, including gay and bisexual men and anyone who takes PrEP, will be able to donate plasma without a wait period, providing they meet all other eligibility criteria. Extensive research and modeling show that there will be no impact to the safety of the plasma supply with this change. Most people in a sexual relationship of 6 months or more with a single partner will be eligible to donate blood. The statement highlights one remaining restriction. Most people with new or multiple partners will also be able to donate blood if they have not had anal sex in the last 3 months. Veteran activist and Let Us Give campaign spokesperson Rodney Croon told The Guardian, "Australian lives will be saved by this overdue and important decision." Lifeblood Chief Medical Officer Dr. Joe Pink expects the change to bring in some 24,000 more individual donors per year and result in 95,000 more annual blood donations.
Funding for suicide prevention programs targeting LGBTQ young people is being eliminated by the Trump administration. The 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline Press 3 option for queer youth will close on July 17th. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's own data shows that more than 1.2 million LGBTQ plus young people used 988 Option 3 from its beginning in July 2022 through February 2025. The agency's press release explained that it was making the change to focus on all help seekers. The Trevor Project has received a 30-day notice that its federal funding would be ending. The nonprofit focused on suicide prevention efforts among LGBTQ plus youth estimates that more than 1.8 million queer young people consider suicide each year, and that at least one attempts suicide every 45 seconds. The Trevor Project experienced a record-breaking 700% increase in calls to their hotline on November 6, 2024, the day after Trump was elected to his second non-consecutive presidential term. To Trevor Project CEO James Black, "The fact that this news comes to us halfway through Pride Month is callous, as is the administration's choice to remove the T from the acronym LGBTQ+ in their announcement." Black vowed, "Transgender people can never and will never be erased." The Trevor Project's own hotline pre-existed the federally funded 988 Option 3 line, and that effort will continue despite the termination of the government contract. Black is quick to say, "I want every LGBTQ plus young person to know that you are worthy, you are loved, and you belong." Despite this heartbreaking news, the Trevor Project's crisis counselors are here for you 24/7, just as we always have been, to help you navigate anything you might be feeling right now.
A federal judge is continuing to block the U.S. State Department from denying the option of an X gender marker on U.S. passports. This week, District Judge Julia Kobik expanded a temporary injunction that she first issued in April, halting enforcement of the Trump directive. Six trans and non-binary plaintiffs want to choose the X gender marker on their passports. Kobik concluded that the State Department is discriminating against them on the basis of sex. Her extension of the injunction this week also included class action status to trans people using M or F, as well as to those who want to use X. That now allows all trans, non-binary, and gender non-conforming U.S. citizens the chance to apply for an accurate passport. According to Kobik, the State Department's actions affected all of them by preventing them from obtaining passports with a sex marker consistent with their gender identity. White House Deputy Press Secretary Anna Kelly derisively called Judge Kobik's latest decision another attempt by a rogue judge to thwart President Trump's agenda and push radical gender ideology that defies biological truth. The Trump administration already appealed the judge's original April ruling last week. Lee Nalin Sol is with the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV Project, one of the legal groups fighting for the X option. She applauded the judge's latest action, calling it a historic win in the fight against this administration's efforts to drive transgender people out of public life. Nalin Sol added, "We encourage all class members impacted by this policy to take advantage of this injunctive relief, and we will do everything we can to block this policy permanently."
Finally,
blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue sky do I see.
U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance's foray into blue sky turned out to be as popular as his election campaign visit to a donut shop or his recent trip to Greenland. No one knows why Vance decided to join the platform favored by users who've soured on the rabidly right-wing content of Elon Musk's X. It only took 2 days for Vance to become the most blocked account on Blue Sky in its first 4 years of existence. The Veep posted his support for far-right Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's comments about this week's Scrimmity ruling, particularly that trans youth healthcare relies on questionable evidence. The unofficial data tracker, ClearSky, counted more than 110,400 users blocking Vance within the first 48 hours of that anti-trans post. Blue Sky users pulled no punches. One wrote, "Dude, WTF are you even doing here?" One suggested Vance should please return to Donald Trump's Truth Social and F off. Nobody cares about your opinion. Another user wrote, "You and Trump and the rest of the clown car cabinet in action and words have proven to be immoral, incompetent, criminal, lying, despicable humans."
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending June 21st, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Ava Davis. Stay healthy.
And I'm Michael LeBeau. Stay safe.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I'm not a mistake. I'm not your verdict. I wasn't born to be judged. I am the voice you are never taught to hear, but it sings, it beats, it shouts, I'm here.
Transgender people got another legal gut punch when the U.S. Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's ban on pediatric gender-affirming health care. The conservative majority handed down its 6-3 ruling on June 18th. Their decision lowered the bar for establishing the constitutionality of Tennessee's ban, and that imperils the rights of young trans patients in the 20 other states with similar laws, all despite the opposition of every major U.S. medical association. The Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law conducts independent research on sexual orientation and gender identity law and public policy. His founding director, Brad Sears, sat down with This Way Out's David Hunt to unpack the Supreme Court ruling.
In a friend of the court brief filed with the U.S. Supreme Court last September, scholars at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law argued against Tennessee's ban on gender-affirming care for young people. Laws enacted in conservative states, primarily in the South and Midwest, outlawing puberty-blocking medications and hormone therapy, place unfair burdens on transgender youth and their families, the scholars wrote, forcing them to either travel great distances at great expense to access care or to forego gender-affirming care entirely. Writing for the majority, Chief Justice John Roberts took note of the brief, quoting from page 5, to acknowledge that transgender people do exist, that an estimated 1.6 million Americans over the age of 13 identify as transgender, meaning that their gender identity does not align with their biological sex. But it was downhill from there. I'm David Hunt. I asked Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute, and a longtime legal scholar at the University of California, Los Angeles, to take a deep dive into the court's sometimes tortured reasoning in United States v. Skirmetti. Why don't we start at a pretty high level here? The Supreme Court came in today with the ruling in the Skirmetti case, and this is a Tennessee law that bans gender-affirming health care for minors. I guess not unexpected. What's your reaction?
Yes, I don't think the Supreme Court's decision is unexpected. And so, and you're exactly right. What it does is it upholds Tennessee's law banning gender-affirming care, receiving puberty blockers or hormones for transgender youth. Close to half the states have a law like Tennessee's. Those laws were already in effect. So what the court has said today is there's no constitutional problem with those laws, at least with the constitutional arguments that we heard as part of this case.
Okay, so the question before the court was whether this Tennessee law, SB1, violates the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. So had the court found that the law violated that clause, what would that have triggered in terms of judicial scrutiny?
One of the main things that the lawyers in this case were arguing for was that the court consider this a form of sex discrimination, that your gender identity is like being male or female, being cis male or female, is your sex, and people were not being allowed to have treatments that are offered to others merely because they were transgender, and this was discrimination based on sex. Well-established precedent that type of discrimination, the court takes a closer look at and really makes sure that any restrictive policy, any burdensome policy has a strong reason for it. So it would have been one outcome of this case would be to say, yes, this is discrimination on the basis of someone's sex. It needs to go back to the lower court to hear more evidence about the burden that it has on transgender people. And then what the state is going to argue is why, even though there is a burden, the law should be permissible. Instead, the court said it's not discrimination based on sex, not necessarily surprising based on the oral arguments, but not that logical, as some of the dissenting justices pointed out. Therefore, we're going to hold these laws to our lowest level of review. And under that level of review, we almost always say the law is okay and this ban is okay.
the sort of rational basis review merely requires the state to have some rational reason for enacting the law. And the Supreme Court found in this case that the rational reason was that the medical treatments were risky. And so therefore the state, in terms of its view, protecting youth from risky or dangerous procedures, could enact this ban.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great description of rational basis review. You nailed it. It even goes one further, is the court will defer the legislature even when something's uncertain. So if there are competing bodies of research out there, maybe there's only one study that goes against the majority of others, the court will say, it's not our decision to weigh that research. We'll let the legislature do it. And if you read the opinion from Justice Roberts' opinion, kind of throughout the concurrences, that's what they at least claim they're doing. There's uncertainty in this area. We're not drawing a research conclusion. We're going to let the legislature in Tennessee draw that conclusion. That's their role, not ours.
What the court also said was that the law, the majority said, the law does make distinctions, but not based upon sex or trans status, but only on two things, age and medical diagnosis. I guess my reading was that they were, and Sotomayor's dissent sort of made the point that they were sort of twisting themselves around to try to get to their desired result.
Yeah, you have to do some, lawyers are accused of doing legal gymnastics. I think the court is definitely doing some Olympic level legal gymnastics to be able to say, I'm not denying you these treatments because you're transgender. And it's not even discrimination on the basis of transgender status, because you can be transgender. I'm just saying that if you need hormones or puberty blockers based on having gender dysphoria, that's being denied to you. It's not based on your sex, because it doesn't matter what sex you are. If your reason for taking these treatments is to have a body consistent with your gender identity, it doesn't matter if you were biologically born a man, a woman, we're treating all sexes the same.
Okay, so to get further into the weeds, both sides discussed the Bostock case, and there was a lot of talk on the right in the majority about, Thomas felt like we don't even need to engage with Bostock, and Roberts was and some of the others were like, well, we'll talk about Bostock and why it doesn't apply. So can you explain what Bostock is and why the court decided to avoid it?
Yeah. What's interesting about Bostock is that the majority of the Supreme Court and Justice Gorsuch, who's part of the conservative majority on this Supreme Court, they said that our civil rights laws that prohibit employment discrimination do protect transgender people, because discrimination against transgender people is sex discrimination. So they cut through this really strained legal argument where you were just taking us through when the court was making. They were able to cut through that and say, based on the language of Title VII that prohibits employment discrimination, this is still sex discrimination. So that kind of reasoning was at issue in that case, and Bostock might have been a reason that the court took a different path today. The Bostock opinion and Justice Gorsuch, who wrote it, really said it had to do with the very specific words of Title VII. And some of the dissenters pointed out there may be specific differences, but they're not meaningful differences. But there was that textual limitation to the Bostock decision. I think what's kind of amazing about today's opinion is that the majority didn't let the reasoning in Bostock get in the way of their strained reasoning today. They also didn't turn around and overrule or undermine Bostock. And so people were concerned about that as well. We could lose our employment discriminations for transgender people in the workplace. And I think with today's decision, you have a very strong majority for sure in support of the Bostock decision as it applies to employment discrimination, and leaving open broader applications in other contexts.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm David Hunt. Continuing my conversation with Brad Sears, the Judge Rand Schrader Distinguished Scholar of Law and Policy at the Williams Institute. there was this range of possibilities that the Supreme Court could go with. And one of them was to say the Equal Protection Clause does not cover sex discrimination. That's sort of the, you know, one extreme. And then the other, of course, would be to follow Bostock and say, no, the sex discrimination, this is sex discrimination, and it's not legal. But they took a middle ground.
This is a devastating opinion impacting hundreds of thousands of youth and families that are now really, I think, faced with making a decision about, am I going to ask my child to change who they are? Or are we going to change where we live? I think that's the decision facing a lot of families today. They don't get to be hopeful about future decisions because they have to make decisions across the short adolescence of their child. And so that, I think, is really the painful decision, the painful impacts of this decision today. Thinking longer term, I think there are some positive things you can pull out of this decision. People need to work to earn a living. There are protections still in place for transgender people in the workplace. There are other legal arguments available to transgender people, including under the Equal Protection Clause. This court did not decide whether gender identity was a status protected for heightened scrutiny. And there was some discussion about the types of discrimination that transgender people face. It was very much about minors and medical treatment. And so does not apply to adults. But Justice Roberts even had some language that would indicate, okay, if I'm living in one of the states and I can't gender affirming care, but I want to go to school and use the name that's comfortable with me and the pronouns, this opinion hasn't decided that either. So there's still room for other arguments. And I think one of the most reassuring things I see about this opinion is that if you look at the actions by the precedent, they are based on transgender people. Like, transgender people don't exist. There are only two binary sexes. To the extent there are people saying that they're transgendered, they either have a mental health issue, or in the case of the military, literally the executive order says they're committing fraud on the military. This opinion is devastating, but it starts with one short, simple sentence: that there are 1.6 million transgender people in the United States, and it defines what being transgender means. To me, that seems like a clear rejection of the Trump administration's portrayal of transgender people as either confused or people who are trying to commit fraud on others around them.
In her dissenting opinion, Justice Sonia Sotomayor accused her conservative colleagues of abandoning transgender children and their families to political whims. And she said the decision will do irrevocable damage to the Equal Protection Clause and invite legislatures to engage in discrimination by hiding blatant sex classifications in plain sight. American Civil Liberties Union attorney Chase Strangio, the transgender man who argued the case before the High Court last December, had this reaction. "The ruling is a devastating loss for transgender people, our families, and everyone who cares about the Constitution," he said. "Although this is a painful setback, it does not mean that transgender people and our allies are left with no options to defend our freedom, our health care, or our lives." The court left undisturbed Supreme Court and lower court precedent that other examples of discrimination against transgender people are unlawful. "We are determined as ever to fight for the dignity and equality of every transgender person, and we will continue to do so with defiant strength, a restless resolve, and a lasting commitment to our families, our communities, and the freedom we all deserve." I'd like to thank Brad Sears, founding director of the Williams Institute, for sharing his expertise for this program. For This Way Out, I'm David Hunt.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Ava Davis and Michael Lebeau, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was David Hunt. The SABT Choir, Styx, Eric Borchard, and Sean McGuire performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Yavanna Foundation, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappell, and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Brian DeShazer. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on KDUR Durango, Colorado, 3ECB Croydon, Victoria, WADR Janesville, Wisconsin, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned.
Hi, this is Dwight Yoakam, and you're listening to KBOO.
For those who don't know, this is an exclusively trans-masculine comedy night.
Part of my work is, like, I really want to achieve a certain level of visibility so that I can shine love on people who are like, you're supposed to hate me. And the answer is no, I don't. And that, I think, can have a really powerful effect on people. Big Dead Energy is an exclusively trans-masculine showcase.
You know, being a man is weird. I look like Jason Bateman, and I have the heart of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Hundreds of thousands defy Orban to parade pride in Budapest, 75 arrested at Indonesian gay party, and trans-mask comedian Marvel Rex stands up for Big Dad Energy. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Melanie Keller.
And I'm Natalie Munoz.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 29th, 2025. Hungarians and visitors from around the world turned out by the thousands in defiance of Prime Minister Viktor Orban to march in Budapest's LGBTQ Pride Parade. Budapest Pride President Victoria Radvani told Agence France-Presse, "We believe there are 180,000 to 200,000 people attending." The record-breaking but low-key throng marched on June 28th from Budapest City Hall through the city center before crossing the capital's Erzsébet Bridge over the Danube River. The autocratic prime minister's governing party ran the law through parliament in March that makes it an offense to hold or attend events that depict or promote homosexuality to minors aged under 18. Orban later acknowledged that Budapest Pride was the intended target. Authorities threatened ahead of the march to use facial recognition software to identify parade goers and punish them with fines of up to 200,000 forints. That's about $586. If charged, event organizers face up to a year in prison. Dozens of European Union members of parliament and other politicians from across the continent marched in the parade. Liberal Mayor Gerge Curasonia helped skirt the official barriers to the event and marched with opposition party members and other city officials. The massive pride march dwarfed a neo-Nazi group's tiny, white Christian, heterosexual men and women only counter-demonstration.
What authorities called a gay party in the Indonesian city of Bogor was raided on June 22nd. 74 men and one woman were arrested in the latest police action in an ongoing crackdown. Reports from the public regarding gay activities initiated the bust on a villa in the city's Puncak neighborhood. According to authorities, sex toys, four condoms, and other evidence of alleged gay activities were confiscated. Muslim-majority Indonesia has no secular national laws against same-gender sex, Strong societal taboos remain, however. Queer defendants are often charged with violating the pornography law, which criminalizes material that contravenes community morality. As Amnesty International's statement pointed out, ambiguously worded laws on pornography are often exploited to deliberately target LGBTI people, denying them the basic right to privacy and the right to enter into consensual relationships. The Bogor raid, about 40 miles south of Jakarta on the island of Java, is not unique. 56 people were arrested in Jakarta itself on February 1st at an alleged gay party. Yet another Jakarta Hotel so-called gay sex party was raided on May 24th with 9 arrests. The 75 most recent detainees are facing up to 15 years in prison for violating Indonesia's pornography law.
India's transgender women are legally entitled to recognition as women. This according to a landmark ruling issued by the Andhra Pradesh High Court. In his June 16th decision, Justice Venkata Geothirma Pratapa rejected the argument that only women who can bear children qualify as women. He wrote that previous court rulings showed that prohibiting trans women's rights to identify as women amounted to discrimination. Pokala Shabana brought the case to the High Court in 2022. She was seeking protection from her abusive in-laws under a section of the Indian Penal Code. Her husband's parents fought her on the grounds that as a trans woman, she was not covered by laws forbidding cruelty against a woman by a husband or relatives. The court's decision to uphold Shabana's legal standing as a woman establishes a precedent for similar cases in the future. It ensures that trans women can access the same critical protections against domestic abuse available to cisgender women. However, Shabana lost her case due to lack of evidence of the abuse.
The U.S. Supreme Court capped its current session on June 27th with 2 cases that revolve around conservative religious beliefs. One allows parents to shield their public school children from LGBTQ-inclusive material that does not align with their faiths. The other requires health insurance companies to pay for certain types of preventive care, including HIV-blocking medications like PrEP. The first ruling is in Mahmoud v. Taylor. Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland had initially allowed parents to opt their children out when LGBTQ-themed books were made available in classrooms in October 2022. That process became excessively cumbersome to administer, and there were also concerns that the policy potentially violated anti-discrimination laws. When school officials ended the opt-outs in 2023, devout Christian and Muslim parents then sued to have them reinstated. The High Court took their side. Far-right Justice Samuel Alito wrote in the 6-3 majority's opinion, "We have long recognized the rights of parents to direct the religious upbringing of their children, and we have held that those rights are violated by government policies that substantially interfere with the religious development of children." There was strong dissent from the court's 3 progressive justices, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson. Sotomayor's scathing minority opinion warned that the ruling threatens the very essence of public education. She wrote, "The court, in effect, constitutionalizes a parental veto power over curricular choices long left to the democratic process and local administrators. That decision guts our free exercise precedent and strikes at the core premise of public schools, that children may come together to learn not the teachings of a particular faith, but a range of concepts and views that reflect our entire society. The reverberations of the court's error will be felt, I fear, for generations."
The second directly LGBTQ-related end-of-term Supreme Court ruling was in the case of Kennedy versus Braidwood. It upholds key provisions of the Affordable Care Act that require private health insurance companies to cover preventive care, such as cancer screenings, vaccines, and the pre-exposure prophylaxis medication known as PrEP, which greatly reduces the risk of transmitting HIV/AIDS. The plaintiffs cited their religious beliefs, claiming that coverage for PrEP encourages and facilitates homosexual behavior. Trump-appointed Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote the opinion for the 6-3 majority. Kavanaugh was joined by the court's three progressive justices, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Brown Jackson, Chief Justice John Roberts, and conservative Justice Amy Coney Barrett. Gay Congressional Equity Caucus Chair Mark Takano praised the ruling, saying, "After several terrible anti-LGBTQI+ rulings, the Supreme Court today got at least one thing right, and both LGBTQI+ peoples and the wider public's health will be safer because of it." The Supreme Court further rocked the nation with a ruling that could assist Trump's effort to suspend birthright citizenship.
Finally,
I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens. I want to be in the room where it happens, the room where it happens.
A group of queer-supportive U.S. senators organized a defiant guerrilla theater Pride Month concert at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. The event trolled President Donald Trump's efforts to ban drag and suppress queerness at the venerable Washington, D.C. showplace. Many artists have declined to perform at the center since the Trump takeover, and subscription sales for the coming season are down by more than 35%. However, on June 23rd, a 144-seat lecture hall in the building featured out-Broadway performers and fierce ally and creator of the highly acclaimed musical Hamilton, Lin-Manuel Miranda. The D.C. Gay Men's Chorus Pride concert at the center had been canceled, but on this evening, they shared the stage with famed playwrights Tony Kushner and Harvey Fierstein. Colorado Senator John Hickenlooper spearheaded the evening's entertainment, joined by out Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin and a few other Senate colleagues. In the words of co-conspirator and Hamilton producer Jeffrey Seller, "This is our way of reoccupying the Kennedy Center. This is a form of saying we are here, we exist, and you can't ignore us. This is a protest and a political act."
That's News Wrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending June 28th, 2025. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Natalie Munoz. Stay safe.
Hello, this is the actor Michael Emerson. I play Ben on Lost. It's not easy being one of the others. So if time travel or moving the island isn't an option and you're feeling sort of lost, try listening to Greg and Lucia on This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
I love to laugh, loud and long and clear. I love to laugh, it's getting worse every year. The more I laugh, the more I fill with glee. And the more the glee, the more I'm a merrier me.
Big Dad Energy. It might be the vibe given off by men when they do stereotypically dad things, or it's a transmasculine stand-up comedy troupe that's anything but stereotypical in these terrible times of queer and trans erasure. This Way Out's Jason Jen takes us to the Los Angeles LGBT Center's Renberg Theater to meet the group's award-winning ringmaster at a performance for West Hollywood Pride.
So this is Big Dad Energy Show. For those who don't know, this is an exclusively trans masculine comedy night. I am a transsexual. Yep, you're looking at one. I got one, woo! Thank you. I am a transsexual person. I like to use the word transsexual because I want to kind of carve out some space. you know, being a man is weird. I know what I look like. I look like Jason Bateman, and I have the heart of Patrick Bateman from American Psycho. You know you've reached peak pinnacle cis straight man when you watch American Psycho and you're like, I relate to that.
Welcome, Marvel A. Rex, to This Way Out Radio. I'd like you to tell us about Big Dad Energy, what it is, how you got it started, and how you got so many comics involved.
Yeah, Big Dead Energy is an exclusively transmasculine showcase. We have had one trans woman on it, Hayden Johnson, who's hilarious, and she was our sort of surprise mom. I thought it was very funny and subversive. But it is a stand-up comedy night that we started in LA. Technically, it was my brainchild. I came up with it in October of 2022. And then we did our first show actually through a City of WeHo arts grant. We did the first show in January of 2023. I was inspired to do it because, A, I was like, there's nothing like this, and I like to do things that no one's done. So I was like, great, this is new, let's do it. And I was really inspired, I should say, I always give credit to Joey Soloway, who's the showrunner and creator of Transparent, the Amazon original TV series. Joey was like, hey, you're hilarious. We were doing something called Gnarly Hoes together, which was an insane live, not recorded news talk show. It was like Rachel Maddow if she'd taken ketamine. Like, it was an insane news talk show where Joey and I were interviewing, like, basically influencers in LA. And Joey was like, you should do stand-up. You're so funny. And Joey was doing stand-up at the time in 2021, 2022. And I just was like, oh, I like to scare myself. And I was like, I really want to freak myself out. Every year I give myself something that is way out of my comfort zone. And stand-up comedy was totally out of my comfort zone. Because performance art, you can still kind of hide in plain sight. Like, you can really, you don't have to be super vulnerable with your words in some ways. And then with acting, you're playing somebody else's role. So stand-up felt like very, it's very exposing. It can be. I like to do things where I uplift other artists. So I was like, how do I uplift other transmasculine comics as at the same time as uplifting myself and stepping into something that was really uncomfortable for me? And that's how it began. And it really took off. And we got a lot of interest around it from lots of different people. A lot of people are really excited about it as a concept and as a thing that happens in LA.
Yeah. So have you mostly been doing venues in Los Angeles? Have you thought about going into other cities?
So it's all been in LA, mostly. Like, we've done the Zephyr, the Virgil, Elysian Theater. Obviously, we just did the LA LGBT Center, Renberg Theater. When we first did the show, it was like explosive. We sold out both nights. It was really crazy. It was a crazy experience. The woman who runs the Zephyr Theater was like, are you guys famous? Like, should I know who you are? Because people are scamming each other for tickets. Like, this is crazy. This all happened. It was so wild. And then a bunch of trans people on Instagram and social media were like, can you please come to our city? Like, please come to our city. We are sort of in talks with a documentarian who wants to sort of pitch to, it's so complicated right now based on the state of the industry, but pitching to studios and networks around and production companies around having a tour as like a documentary tour of the guys going around, especially red states, and performing. I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah. So like, we thought, oh, we'd go to Salt Lake, we'd go to Texas. So that's still in the wings to be continued, but definitely we want to bring it definitely to the larger US. And I will also say that I can announce in a very soft way that we do have a major production company that is doing a comedy special for Big Dad Energy specifically. And so it will be able to be seen by lots and lots of people within a streaming context, which is really great.
Oh, awesome. How did you gather the troops? Did you know most of them before, or did some of them find out about Big Dad Energy and reach out to you?
I met a lot of folks through Joey. Joey's just always kind of been a hub of trans people since Transparent. A lot of people connect through Joey. So I met like Janaea Future Khan, who's one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, Toronto, Canada, through Joey. I met Ray Schiller. So Joey's definitely was the hub. And I have a producer now, Jet Fink, who's also my trans son by trans birth, all medical terms. Anyway, my son, he finds people. He like reaches out to people on Instagram. He watches a lot of stand-up that gets posted onto TikTok and Instagram. We're always looking for new talent because like, this is such an underrepresented population. A lot of trans guys get overlooked in every aspect of media and culture. So we're always looking to uplift people who may be completely overlooked, essentially. So yeah, all the ways. And we're always open, if someone's listening to this and is like, I'm trans and I'm a stand-up and like I identify as trans masculine, like reach out. You know, we're happy to hear from people and watch people's stand-up.
Yeah, it seems so relevant more and more, especially now, because of everything that's going on with trans erasure. And do you feel that this is part of like your mission, is to be on the forefront of, and in people's faces about this?
Yes. Yes, definitely. It's so interesting because I'm having a lot of complicated conversations right now with all different kinds of folks in the industry and in cultural production. So like I consider myself to be a cultural producer in any way. Like I to use an art term, like I feel very much like a situationist. I'm like, okay, what's the medium at the moment? Let's go. Let's make it happen. Stand up is a powerful one because it's so revealing, but also comedy is such a revolutionary force if used correctly. Yeah, it's really interesting. I do feel like this is my mission, is to kind of be a vanguard and show up by any means necessary. There's also like so much changing right now where I've been getting a lot of opportunities recently. Some of them, it's like people aren't necessarily clocking that I'm trans. So I'm at a really interesting intermediary where I'm in rooms that like trans people can't get access to. It's just so complicated right now. So I'm like really, I'm not being, what's it called? Where you're being covert. Like I'm just showing up as like a talent and as an actor and showing up as an artist. But it's a very interesting moment in 2025 since the election where I'm sort of in rooms where I'm explicitly trans. Like you saw me at Big Dead Energy, like explicitly trans in that space. And then I'm in spaces where, you know, I'm booked on something. The producers didn't look me up. They're happy to have me there because I'm talented, and they don't, like I haven't disclosed. So it's such an interesting moment to be trans. It's very complicated to be a cis passing trans person the way that I am. But I will say this to you, because you come from the art world, and I just feel like this is such an art world conversation. It's like by any means necessary. Like I'm going to get in there, and at some point I'm going to reveal my true nature. And so I just see myself as being, I'm very open to risk. You've seen my performances. Like I'm very open to taking risks, and by any means necessary, I want to get into spaces where I have more power in terms of cultural production and can make a statement, and also a statement from a place of love. Like even with my stand-up, I said this at the show that you saw, like I love men. And I think it's like, you don't hear that many trans folks, you don't hear that many people say like, I love men. And that's been a long journey for me to say that statement and mean it in a broad sense of the word. I want to be a conduit to help like cis straight men not feel scared of trans people and vice versa. And like have trans people be like, oh, maybe we're being too critical on this group of people. So just like, I want to help lubricate ultimately all these disparate groups.
We can't put all cis straight men into one bucket, because there's obviously those who are prejudiced and those who are more open. But have you encountered incidences either in Big Dead Energy or otherwise where you've felt in danger, or that people have not taken to your comedy very well? Or
I certainly have, like on all sides. I mean, I think good art and good comedy is provocative. Like good art makes people think, and good art, I think, kind of punctures people. Like I think of Ron Athey's work, I think of Castle's work, I think of people like, that's really provocative work. And people are like, that, some people are like, I love it. And some people are like, that's disgusting, right? But the disgusting thing is interesting to me, because to be disgusted, you are affected. You are affected. You are sort of, you're all of a sudden implicated because you're having a response. A laugh is a response. It's like an involuntary response. So is a gasp. So is like a ugh, right? So yeah, I've had folks definitely across the spectrum. I've had trans folks get mad at my comedy. I've had cis people get mad at my comedy, but I'm pretty fearless. Like I have a spiritual practice that allows me to just ground myself and not take anything too personally. And I also am always working to better myself in terms of understanding where I'm coming from and making sure that I'm not punching down, because it's so easy to punch down in comedy. So I'm always just like, how do you keep the art at a high level? Which means with comedy, it has to be funny. And part of that is coming from a really, I think, vulnerability, authenticity. I think I'm going to talk about the complexity of the fact that I'm neither a cis straight man nor a cis gay man. I will never be either of those things. I'm a trans man, but I don't look explicitly trans. So I have to speak from my position, which is one that's sort of in between in a lot of ways.
You know, one thing I love about being man adjacent, chicken of the sea, Diet Coke of men, because, you know, if lesbians are Subarus, then transmasculine non-binary people are Priuses, and I'm a BMW. Okay? Yep. If we're going to continue with the analogy, straight men are Teslas, and we can definitely vandalize them. And gay men, they are the grocery delivery robots that roll around WeHo. That's what I'm saying. Coco. Only a gay man would just roll into oncoming traffic at the intersection just to get a Grindr date. You know what I mean? Those crazy robots.
In addition to your comedy practice, you have quite a bit of work that you do in the realm of astrology. And I'm wondering if you see any parallels in what's happening on a cosmic level with the things that are happening right now in this devastating political climate.
Well, I'll answer it this way. I was just recording for my podcast, World of Rex, which is an astrology, weekly astrology podcast. I was interviewing a person named Lindsay, who's also goes by the moniker Bad Pastor. And she was talking about how we're having like systems breakdown right now. And we see that in the astrology very clearly. Like there's major systems breakdown. We actually saw it start in 2020, and we saw astrologers saw 2020. We knew that something really insane was going to happen. It did happen. And then we were like, but that's nothing compared to 2025 and 2026. And so it's very interesting. These 2 years, I'm sort of looking at them, at least from a sort of celestial perspective, I'm looking at 2025 and 2026 as sort of like a death. And then we're in the birth canal. I think 2020 in a way was a death. And then now we're in the birth canal, and birth is a very, very scary process. And things do get really effed up during a birth. Like the parent can get really wounded. The parent can potentially die. Like there's so many things that can happen during birth that are very scary. There's a lot of pain. I do think we're just deeply in that. There's so much happening, at least from an astrological perspective, to do with identity politics. So we see that very clearly in terms of like what identities are valid or not. The thing I can share for folks, the people who are just suspending their disbelief of astrology right now, thank you very much, but it's the word, you know? And so I really want to come from a place of love, because that is actually authentically where I'm coming from. But it's very hard to be in the birthing pangs, right? Like, because it can feel like the tunnel is going to close, we're not going to make it out. I understand that. So I'm oddly optimistic. And I'm living moment to moment like everybody else. And I'm really working to help in the ways that I can. And I think that that's the ultimate goal for the individual, is like, what are the ways that I can be a better community member, a better friend, mutual aid, being present and not being like toxically positive? Because the New Age community can be very toxically positive, and I'm not doing that. I'm also not believing that the worst thing is going to happen, because I see bigger picture cycles happening here. I also just think that like hate doesn't prevail ultimately. You know, I really feel that fundamentally. I'm very curious about my personal goal to be loving towards people that don't expect me to be loving towards them. And I want to do that on a very large scale. So that's part of my work, is like, I really want to achieve a certain level of visibility so that I can shine love on people who are like, you're supposed to hate me. And the answer is no, I don't. And that I think can have a really powerful effect on people.
You can share more of the love with actor, astrologer, and comedian Marvel A. Rex by visiting his website at marvelarex.com. That's MARVALAREX. Or listening to the extended interview on our podcast and SoundCloud channels. For This Way Out, I'm Jason Jen.
Thanks for finding This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Melanie Keller and Natalie Munoz, and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Jason Jen. Leslie Odom Jr., John Denver, and Ed Wynn performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks Brad Furr of K-Gay Palm Springs, California, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all the listener donors who make this program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, media, email us at info@thiswayout.org or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts, and on CFRC Kingston, Ontario, KZZH Eureka, California, WRFI Watkins Glen, New York, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.